Whether we realize it or not, we live in a world surrounded by food preservation. If we go to the grocery store, we have a freezer section, we have refrigerated food, we have canned food, food in boxes. It's all over. In the 18th century, they had none of these techniques, and yet we live in an America that relied on food preservation.
Food preservation wasn't invented in the 18th century. To find the origins of food preservation, we have to go back to ancient Egyptians, to the Romans, to the ancient Greeks, to the Vikings. There we can see the seeds of these methods come together. The simplest and oldest technique is drying. How do we get food dry? We want to pull the moisture out of it. And with some items, that happens naturally. All the grains, especially something like maize or corn that we grow here in the United States by the million tons. Corn naturally dries right there in the field. If you look at the ear of corn, it grows up nice and green, and as soon as it starts to ripen, it starts to dry out, and it droops on the stalk, and it's got a natural husk on it, and it dries right there in the field. All we have to do is wait, and then at the end of the season, we pull that off. All we have to do to preserve that is to keep it dry. That's it. It is already dried and perfect in the field. That's similar with things like wheat, barley, rye, even beans, rice, all very similar to that. They basically preserve themselves. For example, the ancient Native Americans are using corn as one of their staple crops, something to eat all through the year because they had corn that they could preserve by drying it. It's just not the grains that we're drying, though. We can dry all sorts of products. Meat, for instance, we can just simply cut different kinds of meat into thin strips and dry it in the sun. Now, that sounds a little strange to us. We might think that meat is going to go bad, but if we cut it thin enough, it will extract the moisture rapidly enough that it hasn't gone bad at all, and it'll be a nice dried product that can last a long time. Maybe it won't last as long as grains, which might last for a decade or two, but it's still a very good preservation technique, and it can be used with something that's probably not an oily meat. Something like beef or a lot of different kinds of fish are just simply dried. Probably wouldn't want to do that with pork or with something greasy like chicken or duck. And it really depends on the region you're at. If you're in a very dry and especially cold atmosphere, drying is perfect. So stockfish that was done in Northern Europe, they would dry this, basically almost freeze dry it naturally in the environment. Perfect. No salt, no nothing, just drying. A classic food to dry in the sun would be different kinds of fruit, especially grapes that we turned into raisins, drying things like apricots or apples, and the Native Americans drying pumpkin and using that for months in the future for something like wonderful succotash. Not every climate or season is good for drying things outside in the sun. Maybe you don't have sun, or you're in a part of the world that just never gets dry. And if you want to dry something, you have to have an alternative method. You have to have a cold fire situation or just apply heat to it. Without cooking it or even without smoking it, we want to just heat it up. So we'll have slightly warm ovens or situations where maybe above a fireplace in a household where it's always dry, and we can dry things like herbs or different grains, even flowers, to keep them preserved for longer. The application of heat to the drying process leads us directly to smoking and how that helps preserve food for longer periods of time. Smoking meat is very popular today, and it's popular today because of the amazing flavor it brings to the food. Usually, hot smoking, it's really almost a cooking technique. They may have wanted that flavor, but in the 18th century, preservation was the important part about smoking. They were doing cold smoking, and that layer of smoke on the outside, there's different kinds of chemicals there that resist bacteria and even insects from getting into the food and destroying it. Smoking could be done in almost any environment. If you've got a smokehouse, that makes it really easy. But not everybody could have a smokehouse. But most houses did have a large fireplace. They were capable of having things hanging up higher in the chimney for smoking.
there's even people that lament about the change in the fireplaces in the 19th and 20th century, that there was no longer any place in the house to smoke. But smoking could also be done outside, and a lot of smoking was done in primitive situations over a campfire. You just make a rack of twigs to hold the items up off the fire, and you can lay things out and smoke them for days at a time. You'll get a little bit of sun helping to dry the item, and then smoke and the heat off the fire. It's usually done in a combination in our time period. It starts off with a salting process, and then you smoke on top of that. Smoking really lends itself to certain kinds of meats and certain kinds of cuts. The most popular one in the 18th century is bacon. Their bacon, probably a little different than our bacon today. But even today, most bacon is smoked or cured. We desire that flavor. In the 18th century, it was all about preserving that bacon so that it would last for months and months. Today, our bacon probably isn't very old at all, and we don't need to worry about that because of refrigeration. Smoking's been popular for hundreds, even thousands of years. We have stories about Roman soldiers on the march. They're eating smoked sausage. Fish can be smoked in several different ways. You see a lot of very primitive situations where they would just smoke fish on a little rack, or very industrially in the 18th century where they would lightly salt a fish and then smoke it in large smoking situations like a smokehouse here. Another ancient technique for food preservation is salting. Salting can happen in a lot of different ways, and it's been done for thousands of years. We have images of the ancient Egyptians salting fowl. There are several different kinds of food that lend themselves to salting, and several different salting techniques or even ingredients to salting that really cause food to preserve for a great period of time. Meat is a real challenge to preserve, and salting is one of the most common ways of preserving meat. But meat isn't the only thing that we can salt. We can salt things like vegetables or even fruit. When we're preserving meat, though, we usually do either a dry method of salting or a wet method of salting, sort of salting in a brine solution. When we dry preserve meats, we'll use something like a beef, and we will essentially coat it with salt and allow it to dry in the open for several days. And that will draw all the moisture out of the meat, at least as much as we can do in a couple of days. And then we will take all that salt off and pack those pieces of beef in a barrel of salt. And that will continue to slowly draw the moisture out, drying that product out, and that salt will penetrate the beef as far as it can and keep any kind of bacterial growth from happening. But some things are better preserved in a wet pickle, sometimes they call it. It isn't true pickling, which uses vinegar, but a pickling that's in a brine solution. So we will do that to something like pork. So we'll do the same thing. We'll take our cuts of pork, we will coat them with salt in the open, and then pack it in a barrel with more salt, and then pour brine on top of that. That will cause the salt to continue to penetrate into the meat, and it'll cause a softer product. So pork is one of the best things to salt, but it really needs to stay in that brine solution. Now, if we go in and we take pork out of a pork barrel that's been preserved in that method, we will probably have to repack the barrel several different times. So this salted pork might last up to a year, but if we open up that barrel at all, we will have to repack it several times. And each time we'll take that brine out, we'll boil it again to sterilize it, and then repack the barrel. Again, this will last a long time, a full season, a full year, until there's more pork to salt. The end goal here of the brine solution is to keep the meat secure from air. It's to seal that off so that the meat stays good. The brine solution here is a very concentrated salt water. And this is used in
all kinds of situations. Most households, they would have a family pig. And at the end of that growing season in the fall, that pig would be slaughtered. And to save up that meat for the rest of the year, they're going to salt that. Besides beef and pork, fish was another food product that was salted abundantly in our time period and previously to that. Fish really lends itself to salting. It's a fairly small cut usually, and the salt penetrates the fish flesh very, very rapidly. And so we can salt in a bunch of different kinds of ways. They would even bring large quantities of salt along with them when they were fishing to sort of pre-salt the fish to keep them from going bad before they even got back to port. And then a more intense process of salting would go on for some different kinds of fish products. Another classic product for salting that we don't think about much is butter. So today we have salted butter because we like the flavor of salted butter. But salted butter, especially in our time period, it was much more heavily salted and salted because that would preserve it. It's interesting to look at the period recipes because they used different types of salt, different grain sizes of salt, all in one recipe. Knowing that it takes different kinds of salt to penetrate the meat and continue to penetrate the meat. If we use just one kind of salt, it's not going to do it right, and it's not going to give us the right kind of flavor. Sometimes regular salt, sodium chloride, isn't enough to preserve the meat, especially from particularly bad organisms like botulism. If we want to protect against botulism, you have to use something like sodium nitrate or potassium nitrate, and that is included in many of these salting recipes. Now, you might think that this salted meat sounds too powerful to eat, and in a sense, it really is. It's probably the reason why we don't see a lot of salted meat products today, because you just can't cook with them immediately and have anything that's palatable at all. It's way too strong. So to cook a salt beef or to cook a salt pork or salted fish especially, you have to soak them in water and even discard the water several times, add more water back in. So it might take an entire day of preparing your salt meat before you're ready to cook it in a dish so that it's edible at all. In our 18th century time period, storing items in a brine solution was called pickling. But true pickling is storing food in an acid environment. Basically, we were taking food items and submerging them in vinegar. And the classic today would be pickled eggs or pickled onions. Those are very common, but that isn't the only thing that we pickle today, and certainly not the only thing that was pickled in the 18th century. We can pickle meat, but usually pickled meat is a cooked meat, and then it's submerged in the vinegar. They had collared meat products that they called in our time period. That would be a meat that was rolled up with lots of different kinds of spices. It would be cooked, sometimes it was dried, and then submerged in our vinegar pickle. Now, this would cause a very soft meat when it came out of that and had a very, very distinct flavor. This is probably the most common method of preserving food in the 18th century as well as today. Everybody can go to the store and get a jar of pickles. And a lot of our food products today are stored with a specific kind of acid content, particularly for that preservation that's going on. What's kind of interesting here is what started as a food preservation technique turns into something today we desire as a flavor and a texture difference. We want that brightness and the little bit of saltiness that we get out of a pickled food product that in the beginning it was all about food preservation. Now it's all about flavor. In pickling, we're placing our food in an acid solution. But what if we could have the food create the acid itself? That's where fermentation comes into play. Probably one of the most classic fermented products that was popular in the time period and popular today is sauerkraut. It's pretty amazing. We can take cabbage, which was very inexpensive in our time period, a typical food for the poor. We can slice it thinly, place it into a crock, With a little bit of salt in layers, it will naturally start to pull that moisture out, and then it will start to ferment. Ferment with yeast that's sort of right there. The sugar that comes out of that cabbage starts to ferment and turn into a little bit of alcohol and bring its own acid into it. And this gives it a great flavor, and it preserves the cabbage. Now, fermenting obviously isn't just going on here in the 18th century. It's being used for thousands of years all around the world, especially all those amazing pickled products from Asia. Beer is a fermented product, and of course we enjoy it today, but it was the lifeblood of the 18th century. There are places that the water is not safe to drink, but yet the beer was. Now, all we're taking here is converting some of the sugars from the grains, we're fermenting that, and of course, we desire that kind of flavor that we get. Now, this happens not just in beer, but fermenting is going on in wine. Fermentation is also used for milk products, and we can do multiple different kinds of fermentation with milk. We can let milk just sour or turn it into a buttermilk. We can also make soft cheeses and hard cheeses. It's all about what kind of culture is going on and how much salt might be in a mixture to save milk, not just days, but months or even years. Sometimes preservation isn't about necessarily survival, but it's about how to best use what we have, especially if too much comes in at once. If we have a giant harvest of fruit, maybe the best way to keep from wasting it is to turn it into an alcohol. We might turn it into a wine or even distill that into a brandy. Using sugar is another way to preserve food. Usually it's done with something like fruits. They really lend themselves to sugar preservation. And this, again, has been done for hundreds of years. We have the Romans submerging things in honey. And in our time period, they're sugaring different things, coating them in sugar. That sort of draws out the moisture. And the sugar itself is antibacterial. It keeps them from spoiling. Another way to achieve the same thing, especially with fruit, is to make a concentrate. We drive the moisture out of the fruit, usually just by boiling it, and that increases its sugar content to the point where it won't spoil. Jams or jellies are something that we have today that we use, and we just take that fruit and we boil it down. Sometimes we add a little bit of sugar, and it'll keep for a long time. There's circumstances where they didn't know that fermentation was going on. We have a combination of preservation techniques happening. So sausage is a perfect example. We will have a salt going into our sausage to preserve it. We'll have spices going in to preserve it. We'll have smoking going on. And there's also fermentation that's happening almost exactly at the same time. It makes it a very complex product with a lot of complex flavors, and all these different things add up to a preserved food. You probably have canned food in your pantry right now. They didn't have cans in the 18th century, certainly not metal cans, but they did have a way to do almost exactly the same thing. Now, in a canning situation, we are bringing a food up to a pasteurized temperature, and we're sealing that food away from any kind of oxygen, and so that no new bacteria can get into that environment to infect the food and start to make it spoil. In the 18th century, they did potted meats, which effectively did almost exactly the same thing. They would cook a meat in a little kind of vessel like this. Usually it was very finely shredded. They would cook it with a lot of fats that would necessarily kind of move up to the top and then seal that off sort of automatically. And then they would come in and put a little bit of a paper seal on top just so that the fats on the top could not spoil on the very top of that. Clarified butter was sometimes added to the top, again, to seal that off, a natural fat barrier to keep oxygen away from the food. And we would preserve things in bottles in the time period. Whole fruit, something like cherries or strawberries, we could submerge them in water or sometimes in alcohol that would preserve them for a very long period of time. And the bottle is specifically made to have a small surface area so that oxygen couldn't get to the contents. Now, these are all in hard containers, usually ceramic or glass, and today we would use metal. But in the time period, sometimes they would use the food itself to seal it away from the air. So they would cook specific pies, meat pies, with a very, very hard crust. And the crust itself was not really meant to be eaten. It was to seal the food for preservation. We think of meat pies today and we want to eat the crust and that's part of it. But in the time period, it was all about food preservation. And the crust was something that might not be good after a couple of weeks, but the contents still would be. So we'd eat the inside and then throw away the crust. There are all these food preservation techniques, and there's one set of people that seem to have to use all of them, at least in one little kind of way, and that's the military, and maybe even specifically men on board Navy ships of the time period. They have to use all these different food techniques because they are away from land. There is very little food that you can just get out in the middle of nowhere. Yes, occasionally you can catch a fish, but you can't depend on that. So they use salt provisions, they use fermenting, they use all these different things together so that they can survive over thousands of miles of ocean travel. It can be easy for us to imagine that we would need food preservation for winter. But the reality is there's so much more to that, especially in the 18th century and for people in North America. You can't travel the oceans, and that's how you get here, unless you have food preservation. You can't move from the East Coast into the West unless you have food preservation. You really can't have America without food preservation.